Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today. Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose.
You know it's Taz and Moose. Hey. All right, it is Taz and the Moose with you right here on CBS Sports Radio as we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Been a good show so far. Rex Walters, Nevada assistant, joined us. JR, the legendary JR. Jim Ross joined us, talked a little wrestling, talked a little Oklahoma football at the top of the second hour. And if you missed any of those conversations, make sure to check out that podcast, radio.com, Apple Podcast. And we appreciate all the support and the downloads each and every day. Top of the third hour, let's get to it, the three.
It is now time for the three. We get you caught up on the three biggest headlines of the day with Taz and the Moose. Number one.
Rumors Cardinals could draft Murray, keep Rosen.
Yeah, that, which makes no sense. I mean, there's that. As Ian Rappaport had the report yesterday, Taz, the Cardinals could indeed do that. Hold on to Josh Rosen because his value is not particularly high right now. And also draft Kyler Murray. I think that might be one of the dumbest ideas. You know why teams lose in the National Football League? That's why teams lose in the National Football League, because they can't help themselves. And bad organizations and poorly run organizations, and there's a reason why. And this is the exact reason why. All right, you admit you made a mistake with Rosen. He doesn't fit the offensive system Kingsbury is going to want to run. You cut it off at the knees. You end the drama. You end the storyline, Taz. You move on as an organization. And so be it. That's it. Get rid of Rosen. Draft Kyler Murray.
Right.
And go from there. But they don't seem to want to do that because they're not getting the value that they want back for Josh Rosen.
Exactly. Continue or get moving with talks with the Chargers or the Giants, right, or the Pats, whatever. That's some of the teams we heard come out and that there's been some scuttlebutt with Arizona in regards to Rosen. And move him on. And just move on and be full throttle that we're going number one pick. We're going to get Kyler Murray. So Kyler Murray, then he's locked and loaded. He knows he's going to be in Arizona with his buddy Kingsbury. Kingsbury will be happy as a pig and you know what, because he's got Murray, his, you know, the kid he loves. Rosen then can go about his career, wherever that may be. If it is with the New York Giants, maybe it is with the New England Patriots, maybe it's with the Chargers, you know, wherever it might be. You know, I mean, he's going to end up somewhere, Rosen. But I just don't, and we talked a lot about this earlier, just having both these guys on your team is just a stupid move. And like I said, you know, it only makes sense to move them because then it's just better for everybody involved. You broke that down earlier also in our conversation. So, yeah, we'll have to see. You know?
Yeah, and you're looking at, if you're looking at breed competition, which who's not in favor of breeding competition, but not at that position. You have to make a declarative and bold statement which guy is yours. And if Kyler, and here's the other thing, Taz, we didn't mention earlier. So, say if Kyler Murray gets beat out by Josh Rosen, what does that exactly say about Kyler Murray? You're compounding the problem. You go around and around in circles here to where logically it makes little to no sense to do, yet it's on the table for them to do it. Now, maybe it's a veiled threat, Taz, that they want floated out there to try and say, well, if you're not going to give us what we want for Josh Rosen, damn, we'll keep him.
Right.
But it would be doing your organization a disservice. It'd be doing your fan base. It would be doing the players involved a disservice if you did so.
Yeah, because there's got, look, we know, like we named some teams, and even earlier we mentioned the Raiders, and I was just talking about the Giants or the Pats or even the Chargers. And, you know, like, there are teams that need or will be or pretty interested in getting their hands on Josh Rosen. There is something there in Rosen. And you mentioned this earlier, Moose, you're right. I mean, Arizona Cardinals, you guys moved up in the draft last year to get Josh Rosen.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? Like, why let this continue? If you're Arizona, you don't need the concentration on this. What, are you going to mark out for yourself so people are talking about you? About your team, about what are they going to do? What are they going to take? And that's what we're doing right now. But it's going to get to a point where everyone in the media is just going to realize, all right, well, look, they're just going to keep Rosen, and they're going to draft Kyler Murray. You gave the odds from Vegas of Kyler Murray signing.
Yeah, 14, well, it's getting drafted.
Oh, drafted, man. That's
right. 1,400 to 2,000, minus that
is. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's like everybody, and their mother and dog and cat realizes that this guy is going to go to the Cardinals. The Cardinals are going to make the move and grab him. in that number one spot. You know what? Maybe the Raiders try to make a move out of that fourth spot. And what are they going to get that one spot? Arizona's not giving up that one spot. You know that, Moose. It's not going to happen.
No, I don't think it will. They've got an unbelievable amount of needs. But to me, I would look at this as complete utter nonsense. But it was a story that was thrown out there and certainly one that we discussed.
Number two.
Report Russell Wilson will not consider holdout.
Right, so we discussed this yesterday.
Yeah.
April 15th, the deadline. He's got 1 year left on his deal, $17 million. I think he counts a tad over $23 million against the salary cap for the Seattle Seahawks. That he wants a contract extension, and he put down a deadline for April 15th. But, you know, he's done this before, and he got rewarded for it. He's not going to sit out anything, Taz. It's just the April 15th deadline is out there for, you know, for whatever reason.
He's entering the final year of his four-year deal. $87.6 million contract signed in 2015, in the summer of 2015. And look, he's been open about it, Wilson. He's been open about the fact that he loves Seattle. Like, I guess, not just playing for the Seahawks, but it's a beautiful city. I've been there. It's a beautiful spot. I mean, if you like rain, and I happen to like rain, so that's why I guess I like it. Maybe Russ likes rain, too, but I digress. But, yes, he does like being in Seattle. So you got to assume that he'll do whatever he can to get this thing done. And I feel, like I said the other day, he has earned the right to have that comfort so people aren't talking throughout this upcoming NFL season, well, what's going to happen when Wilson's deal ends? Where's he going to go? What's going to be the deal? But he wants to kill all that narrative and be signed, locked in. That's why he gave them a deadline.
Right.
No distractions.
No, I get no distractions, but if there's no ramifications, what's the point of the deadline?
Well, that's what we said the other day. I don't have the answer to that. Because like he's putting a deadline, but so what happens to your point of ramification?
Well, he said nothing.
Nothing. Right.
Nothing
so he's
changes.
Say it, so
he's
nothing
doing
changes.
Everything. Right. He's gonna partake in all the offseason programs. He's not gonna sit out. He's gonna you know be the leader and the quarterback of the organization. So what's the where exactly does this threat go?
I think it's more of I would assume that Russell Wilson is thinking in good faith, like the Seahawks, because of all his years there and success. If he's putting out a public statement basically saying and a deadline of April 15th, he's telling the team, listen, just get this done now. And he put it out publicly. So now it almost, you're right, there is no ramifications. He said that he's not going to sit out and be that, you know, be a diva and all this jazz. But what he's doing, if you think about it, is actually very smart. He's going to get what he wants because he made it public. So now the heat falls on the Seahawks if they don't get it done by the 15th.
Yeah.
The public heat. It's like, wow, the guy,
but,
you know.
I mean, reportedly the two sides are pretty close on a deal to begin with. I mean, was there a need to necessarily go public?
Yeah, well, maybe that's what happened. Maybe they weren't that close, and once he said this, then it got closer. This was a leverage way maybe for him to get more of what he wants.
Yeah, I mean, going off the report that I read, they said they were surprised that he went public because they were close on a contract. But, I mean, I guess I don't know. I look at deadlines as being, you know, Jacob DeGrom set a deadline and said, if I don't have a deal by opening day with the Mets, I'm not negotiating during the regular season. So then he'd be 1 year closer to Major League Baseball free agency. Russell Wilson saying, all right, sign me to a contract extension by April 15th, but there's no ramifications if you don't. Like I mentioned yesterday, Taz, if they pass April 15th and they come to him in April 20th and said, all right, here's the money. We continue to talk. Is he going to say no? You're 5 days late. I'm not signing that deal.
No, I don't think that would happen. I just think.
I look at it like I really believe that. Like for instance, DeGrom was done negotiating. He basically said, you know, get this done by opening day, or I'm not talking about this during the regular season.
Well, Noah Syndergaard helped him with that.
I don't want it to be.
He went public.
Well, I don't want it to be a distraction, right?
Yeah, right.
You look at Russell Wilson, you know, the Seahawks would still have his control. I mean, he's not necessarily going to be going anywhere.
But they don't. Listen, Russell Wilson is not a problem child. There's never an issue with Russell Wilson.
Sure.
He's respected. He's great. He's a true pro's pro. You know what I mean? And so it's like, I think it looks worse. He knows. He and his people, meaning he being Russell Wilson, know that if he put the ball in the Seahawks court to get the thing done quick. If they don't, he's being Mr. Babyface, Mr. Nice Guy. He's saying, no, I'll be working out. I'll go to the camp. Nothing. So I don't think the Seahawks are going to sit behind the scenes and say, you know what? We don't have to cut a deal with this guy right now because he basically said he's not going to do nothing if we don't. They're smarter than that. The Seahawks know if they don't get this done by the date he gave, the 15th or the 16th, whatever.
15th.
They're going to look like crap. The Seahawks are going to look bad. They are, because he's basically saying, listen, he's being nice about it. That's my point. He's killing them with kindness.
He's being very nice about it. Right, but, I mean, you're going to look at the Seahawks that much differently?
I think the Seahawks fans will. As a Met fan that was waiting for DeGrom to get, you know, even though it was I was super happy that happened. I think that I can understand the Seahawks fans. If your lead guy, your quarterback, your guy, your franchise guy says, look, I don't want distractions going into camp. Yeah. I just want to be happy. I just want an extension. And then your team, the Seahawks, if you're a fan, don't get it done and the deal was supposedly close, you're pissed at that team. Yeah. So they're going to have to pay a custom pissed at them.
No, I get it, but eventually...
Well, that's a big deal, Moose.
No, I guess I just look at it differently. I mean, DeGrom hadn't gotten paid, right? Wilson's gotten paid. You know, DeGrom is 30 years of age, where we know how delicate health and starting pitchers in Major League Baseball is a concern. You know, Russell Wilson has made a lot of money. And God bless, that's great. He deserves every penny that's come his way. Fantastic. He's a franchise quarterback. But, you know, when he signed that contract extension, he was the second highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Now he's the 15th. So, you know, that valuation on that contract has gone down and down over the years. I guess if I'm a Seahawks fan, I'd be bothered with the Seahawks if this deal doesn't get done before the start of the year. I don't know if I'm disappointed if it doesn't get done by April 15th. Well, you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
I think if I wake up I'm a Seahawks fan on April 16th and he's not signed to that extension, I'd say, all right, well, they'll eventually get the deal done. I mean, the two sides want to talk. It's not like, even though there's rumors that maybe Wilson wants to be a Giant, down the line, we still have his control. He's not going anywhere, and we're still having open and frank and good discussions to get this contract done. I'd be more bothered, Taz, if I'm a Seahawks fan, if this tickled into the start of the season. If this is a storyline week one NFL regular season, week three NFL regular season, then more so than it is April 16th or 18th.
I understand what you're saying. What I mean? And Russell Wilson's wife, she's apparently a singer and entertainer.
Yeah.
And I think she would prefer, from what she's saying, she prefers actually to live to be in New York.
Yep.
And, you know, but Russ basically saying that he loves being in Seattle. So that's interesting to see what happens. They're going to get it. He's not going to the Giants. They're
going
to get this
done. I don't think he's going to the Giants. And I think eventually they'll get a deal done, you know?
They will. I just think you got to try to keep him happy, you know? And I think the fans of the Seahawks would think that. But you know what? I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be shocked if the deal's not done by the light. It's a light deadline, right? If you think about it, it's not like, all right, April 15th is a deadline. If that don't happen, I'm sitting out.
Well, right.
That's what you're saying.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, I agree with you.
He's not saying that.
He said a deadline that basically means nothing.
We'll call it a light deadline. Instead of saying it means nothing. It's like, well, here's a deadline. It means nothing. Well, if we don't get video here.
There's no ramifications.
Moose, I got it. I just figured it out.
You got what I'm saying?
You know, I got what you're saying.
All right, thank you, Taz.
Check this out. This is Taz, and I'm speaking on behalf of Mark Malusis also.
Mark Malusis.
If we don't have video here by April 29th. Okay? If we don't get that video locked in.
Emails.
We're going to email people.
Right.
That's right.
We've got a new person.
That's
email.
Right. There's a new name now? Yeah. We have a new person.
Yes. You know the person.
Yeah, but he was in the original meeting.
I know that, but that's where it's been.
Yeah, he's real go-getter, that guy.
They kicked the stone down the road.
Oh, yeah. They kicked it down the road. They took a rocket launcher and shot it down the road.
Correct.
If we don't have video here, big bosses, and I'm talking to you, Mr. Chernoff.
Well, we know it's
we don't have it by April 29th. I'm speaking for Moose here, too.
Yeah, wait.
We don't have it. Well, you'll see. We're going to email you. Yeah. How about that?
Nice.
Like Russ Wilson. Next. We'll get you guys.
Number 3.
Fallout continues from AAM.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
Hey, you sound like Chris. What? Zach was like, play that again. I was like, maybe you should have done a second take on that. Mike, are you producing him when he's doing this or what?
Move along. It's going to take a second to get there.
Okay, we'll do it. Maybe tomorrow. Do it in the undercard.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, and we're going to chat a little bit about the AAF later on this hour. Okay. As we're going to have a gentleman that covers college football, also covered the Alliance for American Football for CBSSports.com. We'll join Taz and myself, and we'll delve a little bit deeper into it, Taz. But, you know, all the stories you hear, the fact that they didn't complete the year, the business venture, and, you know, you get the XFL saying that AAF players are going to be able to have a tryout to try and join the XFL. All those contracts that they had were obviously non-guaranteed contracts, so those days of getting paychecks are over. Although it's kind of ironic when Johnny Manziel's telling people to save his money, save their money. You never know. I mean, Manziel is... family's wealthy, so I mean, I don't think Johnny needs to worry about cash, but he wanted to make a statement and try and send a message to all the other players in the AAF. It's a shame, even though I was not a fan of the league, Taz. I wasn't rooting for the league to fail. I know there were those that were into it. I feel bad for those that spent so much time, energy, and effort to get that league up and running. I feel bad for the players that were looking at this as another chance to continue their football playing career. There's a lot of people that certainly a lot of dreams ended when the AAF basically ceased business operations a few days ago.
Yeah, it sucks, man. It really does. It's horrible. It's like just picture like a really big company closing and a bunch of people right losing their positions, and that's kind of what happened here. And it's just we talked about this the other day. Neither of us expected it to happen during the season.
No.
I mean, really. And I've watched a good amount of these games from the beginning of the season. And like I said the other day, I stand by it. The football was not horrible. It wasn't amazingly great. It definitely wasn't the NFL. The quarterback play, for the most part, and some of the blocking schemes and offensive line play. But as far as a whole for football, the hitting, the tackling, running back play, and the change of rules and stuff, and having that one referee eye in the sky, would have him on camera, and you hear him talking on an IFB to the ref. I enjoyed the bulk of what I saw, and the football, like I said, was not horrendous. It was pretty good. So I would argue with anybody that said, or debate with anybody that says, it was really bad football. That's not true. This wasn't because of the football. It was because of a guy, you know, lost about $70 million in such a short span, and he wasn't going to end up losing any more. And what was initially he was going to put in $250 million from the Hurricanes?
Made promises Hurricanes. That he didn't follow through on.
Right.
And also that sports betting app that a lot of people believe he was in for, the technology there more so than the league. So we're going to chat with Ben Kirschenbaum, covers college football, covered the Alliance for American Football as well for CBS Sports. He's going to join Taz and myself. We'll get a little deeper into that issue coming your way about 20 minutes from now. But straight ahead, the undercard, stories we have yet to hit upon here on this Thursday morning. It's Taz, it's Moose with you, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose, coast to coast, pillar to post on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico, go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance.
Yes, sir. I thought you were done talking. Yeah, any Met fans out there, baseball fans, I'm just following along here, Moose. Ron Darling put out a statement about his book and about the stuff, you know, basically saying he can't comment anymore due to legal threat and stuff like that. And meanwhile, today's Mets opening day. So he said people should be focused on a great opening day. Meanwhile, Lenny Dykstra, who he really ripped in his book, Lenny Dykstra's tweeting. So anybody who's a Met fan, if you want to listen to Taz and Moose as we're live, you could also follow along to those tweets because it's pretty entertaining.
The Dykstra stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll try and delve in when we have some more time.
Yeah, we'll have more time
at some point. Tomorrow morning.
Yeah,
yes.
Tomorrow or something. Maybe next week. Yeah, we'll do it next week.
we can do it tomorrow.
Do it tomorrow?
We can, yeah. We can chat about it tomorrow.
Okay, no problem.
What's going on, Andrew?
They see me mowing my front lawn. I know they're all thinking I'm so wide and nerdy.
Thanks, guys. Sorry, Moose. This report is sponsored by the NFL. On night one of the draft, one fan will win the greatest prize in NFL history. Season tickets for 100 years For official rules on how to enter, visit NFL.com/100/contests. It ends April 7, 2019. As you boys discussed earlier this show, a premature ejection for Spurs head coach Greg Popovich last night, tossed for arguing with the refs after just 63 seconds in Denver. The Spurs went on to lose without him, 113-85. Then Popovich crashed the post-game press conference of Denver counterpart Michael Malone.
We were just talking about an now, NBA record what that was set tonight.
What was the record? What happened?
Somebody got thrown out in 63 seconds.
Are you serious? That person must have, I mean, he must have hit somebody. Huh? Did somebody get hit tonight?
63 seconds is the quickest ejection since Minnesota's Flip Saunders lasted just 146 in January 2012. The Rockets were out of the Clippers last night in L.A., 135-103. The Blazers beat the Grizzlies, 116-89. And Utah won in Phoenix, 118-97. The Jazz have won 11 of 12. They stay two behind Portland for fourth in the West. The Magic are now eighth in the East after beating the Knicks, 114-100. And the Heat losing to the Celtics.
Smart out deep on the right. The foul line, Tatum. Hayward, three in the air. Count it! Gordon Hayward left alone, bust the zone, and it's a seven-point game.
Buckets. Buckets for Hayward right there.
John Wallach.
I thought he said something else.
John Wallach, Leon Poe doing their Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell impersonation on Celtics radio. Boston won 112-102. Gordon Hayward scored 25. The Raptors won in Brooklyn, 115-105. And the Pacers won in Detroit, 108-89. Blake Griffin missing his third straight Pistons game with a sore left knee. Murray State's Ja Morant, UNC guard Kobe White, and LSU forward Naz Reid, the latest to declare for the NBA draft. And UCLA has reportedly spoken with Jamie Dixon's camp about a possible marriage. Dixon just finished his third season coaching TCU after 13 with Pitt. He is from California. The Bruins apparently also want to speak with Virginia's Tony Bennett, but he's got the final four first. Mets ace Jacob deGrom clubbed a solo homer and K-Day career-high 14 over 7 scoreless in a 6-4 win in Miami. The Dodgers got by the Giants 5-3. The Cardinals outlasted the Pirates 5-4-10. And the Red Sox snapped their four-game skid 6-3 in Oakland. And Robert Kraft's lawyers filing a 92-page challenge of his solicitation charges in Florida yesterday. They say police violated not just Florida, but also the U.S. Constitution by installing cameras in the Orchids of Asia massage parlor. They argue those tactics are for more serious crimes, not low-level misdemeanors.
Right.
Back to you guys.
Thank you, sir.
I mean, come on.
Thank you.
You're talking about trying to change the narrative as quickly as you possibly can. So now it's the cop's fault, right?
Yeah.
The Robert Kraft.
I mean, everything still happened.
Everything
he
still
was just unconstitutionally
right.
found out.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean,
so
that's
thoughts
it.
And prayers to him and his family.
Well, I mean, come on, dude. I mean, come on. I mean, yeah, it's almost comical. That video is going to come out, though, too. I mean, that video at some point in time will come out.
I guess eventually it's going to come out.
Yes.
Yeah, I would think
that's
so, too.
What authorities are basically saying down there in Florida. Anyway, let's get to it, the undercard.
Taz and the Moose present The Undercard. The stories from today's rundown that we haven't talked about on the show.
All right, Michael.
All right. FanDuel recognized the Orlando Apollos as the betting champion. Orlando finished 7-1 overall in this three quarters of an AAF season. Do you guys consider the Orlando Apollos the champion of the AAF?
Yeah, why not?
Good insight there, Moose. Yeah, no, I've watched them play a whole bunch. I would think that they were probably the better team. I mean, out of all the teams. When the league first started, I thought Arizona Hot Shots started off really good. And they ended up, they're still in first. I mean, it's kind of hard to discuss if the season's over, but it's not over. They ended up 5-3 if this thing is over, which it is, right? So Orlando Apollos, 7-1, first place in the Eastern Conference. And Western Conference is Arizona Hot Shots at 5-3. So, but tied with them is the San Antonio Commodores, Commanders, take two. That's right. You got that.
Yes.
Got it. Commodores, Commandos, whatever you want to call them. And it don't matter. It's all a moot point because all these teams are gone, including your favorite Moose, the Salt Lake Stallions.
Yeah.
So they're gone.
So,
too.
Yeah, why not?
So, yeah. There you go.
Next.
AAF.
Thank you.
Okay. Bryce Harper versus the Nationals, this little rivalry brewing. Is it the best thing to happen to baseball in a decade?
Yeah, why not?
Best thing to happen in a decade. That's a little strong. I mean, I think there have been, I think you look at great rivalries, Yankee Sox, Cubs Cards, Dodgers Giants in the sport of Major League Baseball. When you look at that, a guy going back to his home, to the team that he came up with, was drafted by with the Washington Nationals, and now a member of the Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah, I mean, I think anything surrounding Bryce Harper being as divisive a personality that he is, I think it's good for the popularity, and I think it's good for the focus of the sport of Major League Baseball. And as we've discussed before, Taz, you need more of it. Bryce Harper can't be the lone guy carrying that flag. You've got to see more of this, because I think that will help drive the popularity of the sport.
I think it is, to answer Mike's question. I think it is the biggest thing, Harper with the Harper against the Nats and how he played, and just Harper with the Phillies, Harper in general. I think it is arguably the best thing that's happened to baseball maybe in a decade, for sure, because he is, and to the points, a lot of the points you just made, he's a star, Bryce Harper. He's a star, he's intriguing. There's something there with him. He's got an it factor. I talked about the other day. I was flipped over from the Mets Marlins game. I know there was like 6,000-7,000 people down in Miami, and there was no energy watching it on TV. I went over to the Nats Phillies game, and it was like I felt like I was watching an NFL game. That's how much energy came off of my gigantic 97-inch television that is ingrained in my wall. But I digress. I do think that Bryce Harper is probably the best thing to happen to baseball in 10 years. Is that an overstatement? I don't know. If you think it is, I don't really care. Not you, people in general, Moose. I feel firmly about that. This guy's a star, and I think he's great for the game. He brings that chutzpah. He brings that it factor. He brings that must-see TV type of feel to a Phillies team and a fan base in Philly that is, as we know, rabid for all their sports.
Yeah, for sure. All right, next.
The Golden State Warriors are racking up technical fouls at an alarming rate. Would the Warriors' technical fouls show you that they are motivated and care, or they're just bored and have nothing else to do?
I think probably I'd say actually the latter rather than the former. I think they're a little bit bored by the regular season, understanding they'll be defined by what they do in the NBA playoffs in the Western Conference, trying to bring another championship. Taz to the Bay Area. I was reading a couple of things out in Gold, by those that cover the team. They said, the chemistry on the team is probably the best it's been in a while. With Draymond and with Kevin Durant and his impending free agency, which is going to be a huge storyline this July. So I'm not overly concerned about them, each of them being one technical away from a suspension. But the fact that the amount of technicals they've garnered up until this stage, I actually think it's kind of a healthy situation, strangely enough, in Golden State.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, they're the best. I mean, they are the team to beat. They are the team. Even though the Nuggets are right behind them. Nuggets sitting at 52-26. Really, really, really good squad, the Nuggets. So, they're kind of on cruise control, Golden State, for sure.
All right, next.
Wow!
And the final one for me, NBA playoffs Eastern Conference is getting pretty interesting with four teams left, three spots remaining, Miami, Detroit, Orlando, and the Nets, all within one game of each other. Which is the odd team out when it's all said and done?
I would say I think your Nets make it. I think the Pistons make it. Magic make it. I think the team out is the team that's out here on this Thursday morning. That would be the Miami.
I was thinking Miami too. They're going to be out. Yeah, Nets look good. Yeah. I agree with you, Moose. I'm with you. Ditto, as they say.
Pistons, yeah, Nets, and Magic. There you go. For the last three spots, it could go in any kind of order. Pistons, but that's 6-8 as we sit here. This Thursday morning.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Ben Kershaval, CBS Sports AAF reporter. We'll talk a little bit of Alliance and what or how it all went wrong. We'll do that next. It's Taz and Moose on a Thursday morning right here, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
That's right. Let's talk a little bit about the AAF, which has gone belly up. And let's welcome aboard Ben Kirschenbaum, CBS Sports AAF, a reporter, covers college as well. Hey, Ben, Taz and the Moose with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Yeah, you bet.
You know, Ben, how surprised, maybe you weren't, how surprised were you of what happened earlier this week?
I think it was surprising in that no one really saw this coming. I went and covered a game this weekend down in San Antonio, and by that point, Tom Dundon had already come out publicly once and said, you know, this deal between the NFLPA and the AAF needs to get done quickly, or all options are on the table. One of them is potentially folding the league. But by the weekend, it seemed that that storm had sort of passed. There was this idea that maybe they wouldn't even make it to week eight, and you know, here we were playing games. And I was told, you know, teams were booking hotels for the next 3 weeks for practice and travel. Okay, so seems like business kind of picked back up. It's sort of business as usual. And then obviously Monday night, he sort of comes out, Dundon does, and doubles down on that approach. And then, you know, Tuesday, you get the shutdown. And so it was surprising in the sense that, you know, it really did just kind of happen all of a sudden. And then everyone that I spoke to, I mean, everyone was completely in the dark on what he was doing. I mean, general managers didn't know. People in the front office of the AAF didn't know. Coaches didn't know. I mean, every move that Tom Dundon was making, absolutely nobody was clued in on what he was going to do and when he was going to do it. But I think if you look back further, writing was probably on the walls pretty much as soon as he came aboard in February, infusing what he said was going to be $250 million into the organization. I think you could start to see traces of remorse within the AAF about bringing him aboard in terms of what his vision for the company was versus the vision of what like Charlie Eversole or Bill Polian had for it all. And then just the way that he spoke so publicly and candidly about things, it just never felt, even though there was such this huge influx of cash and he was sort of an angel investor in that regard, it was just never quite a fit. It's sort of a square peg in a round hole situation.
Yeah, it definitely came off, Ben, for sure, like a lack of passion on his behalf. You know, that just from reading the stuff, I mean, not knowing these people involved.
Well,
you know.
I mean, I don't know Tom, and I can't speak
right
for him and what is inside his head and what his motives are, and so I can't say anything about his passion. I certainly get the impression that he had a very strong vision for what he thought the AAF should be. So I think he had plenty of passion in that regard. I just don't think it ever aligns with anybody else. And then on top of that, when you are a billionaire investor, now you're the control owner of the company, and what you say is the only voice that matters. I mean, not only they called him the chairman of the board. He was the board. He was the only person really making these decisions. So when that's the case, it's sort of your way or the highway. And one way that manifested was the negotiations with the NFLPA, but by no means was that the only factor in this.
Ben, love to get your take. As Moose and I were talking earlier, and I was making a statement about the actual quality of play, of football, of the actual game. I mean, I've watched from the beginning, weeks back of the AAF, probably watched the first 4 or 5 weeks and watched a good amount of games on Saturdays and Sundays. I actually enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't think that, I don't want to sound like I'm not giving them a ringing endorsement from an athletic or football perspective, but it wasn't like the NFL. It wasn't like great football play. It wasn't great quarterback play. It wasn't great offensive line play. But I got to be honest, I enjoyed the games. I enjoyed the rule play. I enjoyed the athleticism of players. The defenses were great. The hitting, the tackling, the way guys are running the ball. As a whole, I felt like, and people that I was reading stuff on social media or my own personal social media, people seemed like they were enjoying it for the most part. What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I talked to your general manager last night, and we both kind of came to the same conclusion, was that, you know, we felt the system was working.
Yeah.
And if the idea is that you're going to be a development league for the NFL, you want to be able to have guys who will go and play on Sundays, or, you know, at least go and get another shot at maybe being a backup or a contributor in some way. And, you know, you look across the eight teams in the Alliance, and I can start immediately rattling off names of guys on both sides of the ball that I think are going to have a real shot to play. And that is what's – now, you know, 8 weeks in, the guys who showed up and made a name for themselves, people ask, well, why, shut down now? And that's a whole other conversation. But the guys who made a name for themselves, they're going to get that shot now regardless, right? I mean, the extra few weeks or whatever, barring injury, was not really going to make a difference much on that front. So I do think the system was working in that regard. But, you know, the interesting thing about the whole NFLPA situation and the negotiations there, I mean, that was supposed to be a multi-year thing that was really going to start heating up more in the off season. And the general manager I talked to last night, he's like, yeah, but, you know, it's really more about tethering yourself to the NFL at that point. Because if you bring down practice squad players, you find a way to, you know, work around their futures contracts and you find a way to insure them if they get hurt, you know, you get past all of those hurdles, maybe marginally you improve your product, right? Because the guys that you have now were practice squad guys or, you know, released before. So you're really talking more or less about the same quality of guys. The only difference is in the NFL, you're not getting those reps, right? You might have some potential, but you're not out there giving yourself the chance to show off that ability. So I don't know that in and of itself would have really raised the quality of play, but I think it would have given you the long-term stability that you needed.
Ben, do you think do you think his interest in the league, the investment initially, was on the level? And what I mean by that was, there's some people that speculated that he wasn't necessarily interested in the AAF, but he was interested in the technology surrounding the AAF betting app. Correct?
That's the rumor. I have been given no reason to believe that.
Okay. So no, you think that when he got into this at 200, when he said he was going to invest $250 million,
yeah, quarter of a billion, yeah,
it had nothing to do with the app. It was all about this league.
That was the indication that I received. No one other than Tom Dundon knows what Tom Dundon is doing, and the reason why I say I have no reason to believe that is one, I've got a couple of denials on the other end, and two, I think there are other factors at play, which namely are the cash flow and the expenses, what the AAF was trying to pay off as far as its vendors were concerned. I mean, Tom was putting in $10 million a week. And I talked to a coach last night, and they said, if you just talk about players' salaries alone, over the basic math says it comes out over the past 7 weeks to about $32 million. So that's another, $38 million that had to go somewhere else. So where was it going? And so, those are the paper trails that, it'll be my job and others to sort of follow as this story progresses. But, they had a lot of expenses. And I think from Tom's perspective, he felt like he had a lot of things to pay for. And if you want this to be a cash flow business, well, man, you're not going to get that at least especially right away. So if you sort of put everything together, and some of this is just a lot of dot connecting at this time because everything is still so raw and fresh, but, I don't think the app technology, I don't think it was some grand scheme by Tom Dundon to come in and get this technology and leave. That's intellectual property. I mean, that is a very ironclad asset that if he tried to take, there would be a loss. There'd be litigation over this. I mean, that is a lot of trouble and a lot of money to eat to try to, outsmart somebody and take this thing.
No, that's fair. But, Ben, I guess, Taz and I, that we're talking a lot about this yesterday, then, I mean, you had to have expected early on here to lose money, right? I mean, you mentioned the visions, right, that Dundon had a different vision than Ebersole and Polian. What was the distinct difference in vision that he had when he took majority ownership of this league?
I'm thinking because I'm trying to tell you what I can tell you on the record.
Okay.
So it basically comes down to, I think Tom did not see this as something that would be like maybe like sold later. And I'm kind of using that in a general sense. I think he thought this was something where, because one question I've gotten a lot is, you know, well, where's the revenue coming from? I think that would be Tom's number one question. Let me put it that way, right? So and that makes sense because he's the one infusing this thing with cash, right? He's the one fronting all of this money. So at some point you want to see a return on that investment. And from him, even though he's a billionaire, a quarter of a billion dollars is still a quarter of a billion dollars. So I think his concern was more about, okay, where are we going to get the revenue from? You know, what are the expenses? And so I think that from his angle is really where he started to go, whoa, I don't know that I can do this. And the shutdown, people say again, like, well, why wouldn't you just wait till the end of the season? Well, when you're shelling out $10 million a week and it's not coming back, I think that's where he says, we need to stop this thing before I lose any more money.
Well, you know, let me ask you, you know, Ben, what you think of, as far as the XFL, that they're fixing to get rolling next season. Vince McMahon's XFL, take two for him, obviously, the failures of it years ago. You know, you think this hurts or helps what Vince McMahon's trying to do? You know, Vince McMahon, as of recent, has sold north of $270 million in stock to fund the XFL. So, and Vince has said on the record that he's prepared to pump in $500 million over 3 years just to get it rolling. So for me,
yeah,
it feels like Vince understands, and I personally worked and know him, so I feel like he's going to try and do the right thing here. But he just hearing that sentence is different than what we heard at the AAF, right? If Vince is looking to pump in $500 million over 3 years just to get it off the ground, he understands, right? It seems that it'll stop. But do you think this, the unfortunates of the AAF now helps, you know, the XFL?
I think they were trying to be markedly different products. But at the end of the day, the entrepreneurial spirit says that at some point someone's going to get this right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Complementary pro football leagues historically have like almost 0% chance of survival. And other than like the CFL, which is the whole other country, it's a whole other thing. So, but other than that, everyone's tried to start this thing up and it hasn't worked for one reason or another. And I think someone's going to develop a league one day, and it might even be when Vince brings this thing back in 2020, someone's going to come back up and go, you know, we've got the formula and it's going to work. And that doesn't mean it won't be expensive at first and you hemorrhage some cash and then you know, at some point you finally start operating in the black. I think that's true for every single startup company, but someone's going to get it right. And it might be Vince, because the one thing he has that the AAF, did not have, and this goes back to even when he launched this thing in 2001 with Dick Ebersol, is, you know, you have a pre-existing infrastructure,
right?
I mean, you have you had NBC Universal, you had General Electric. I mean, you had everything you needed to make the operation run. I mean, he might infuse it with cash because he can, but you have everything that you need to get this thing off the ground. And he's obviously a master salesman, marketer. That as long as Vince McMahon gets and shows that it's about the football on the field, because it really wasn't.
Right,
the
he
first
will.
Time
yeah,
around.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
He will.
Yeah, I think as long as he does that, I actually think he'll be in pretty good shape. I mean, it's nearly two decades later, and he can still use the XFL brand, despite the fact that it was a massive failure the first time around. I mean, that's how much cachet he has. And you know what? I covered the AAF. I hope the XFL works.
Yeah.
And I was talking to someone in the AAF, and they said, you know what? I hope the XFL works, too. I mean, everyone understands.
Ben, we are.
You're just trying to make it work.
Yeah, we're flat out of time,
brother.
Great job, man. Thank you for the time this morning, buddy. Keep up the good work, all right? There you go. Ben Kirschenfeld, CBS Sports. We out. Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.